Hey, you. Subscribe. You're watching Radio Free Cybertron. Hosted by Brian Kilby, with J.D. Church, John DeLuna, XV, Amy Morgan, and Rob Clay. For the latest Transformer news, reviews, and more, visit tformers.com.
Hey, this is Radio Free Cybertron, episode 334. We are well along our way to our 15th anniversary show, which will happen in 51 weeks. This past week was our 14th anniversary show. If you didn't check it out, check it out. It was awesome. It was about 3 hours long. It took so long to put that thing together, but it was worth it.
Yes.
Also, it's kind of important if you watch this week's show or listen to this week's show, because we have the second part of our Jim Sorensen interview this week. And the first part, of course, aired last week. This week, he talks about The Art of Prime, which is the book that he has coming out here. About a month away. So listen to that. With me this week, we have Diecast and Don, the double D's. That sounds terrible. I'm never going to say that again.
Yes, I don't know why. I love double D's. It's fine.
Don.
Fun to play with.
Yeah. It's like a kid in the candy store. Don't tempt me with things I'm not going to be able to get.
Don, you're a player. Let's not relive BotCon from last year or year before.
Yeah, let's not. Let's not say we didn't.
That was awesome. Hey, so Don and I are going to hang out this weekend at the Greensboro Comic Con in Greensboro, North Carolina. Mm. We're going to take lots of photos, and those will be up on our Facebook fan page. If you are in the Greensboro area or North Carolina or the southeastern U.S. or wherever, come on up or come on down. It's going to be fun. By the time you actually hear this, it'll already have happened.
Because it's Saturday, it'll still be going on Sunday.
It's not. My Saturday is so full. This is going up. Oh, that's true. No, that's true. It's going to go up Sunday. So if you catch this when I post it around 10:30 Eastern Sunday morning, you'll have a few hours to check it out. Just, you know, hop on a plane, fly down. It'll be great. I'm really looking forward to that. My friend Mark is going too, and it's going to be a hoot. Like I said on the show this week, we have part two of our Jim Sorensen interview. Don and I got a chance to sit down with Jim a couple weeks ago, and that was a lot of fun. We also have a comic review, Transformers Regeneration 1, number 95. We have Q&A with Rob Springer. Transformers Rewind, which is Garbage In, Garbage Out, which features myself, Don, Diecast, and Melvar. Hey, Melvar. But let's start things off this week with not the return, because we brought it back last week, but this week in history. 27 years ago this week, Webworld debuted. Oh, my God.
Yes.
What's Webworld?
The best episode of Transformers
ever. You just did not ask that.
Are you saying that because you want me to talk about how awesome it is, or because you really don't know?
Well, you know, there might be people listening that don't know.
So Webworld is an episode which basically features Galvatron abusing Cyclonus and this their abusive relationship. And Cyclonus pretty much has enough, and he sends Galvatron to the loony bin. Basically the gist of the episode. And it's amazing.
This is probably the most Decepticon-centric episode we've ever had.
I loved it.
Up until the Prime episode that with the zombies, that was just Knockout and Starscream running around fighting zombies, because that was all Decepticons. But Webworld is probably one of the two or three Season 3 episodes that everyone talks about being the best episode.
Yeah, we did a Transformers Rewind on that, and I will try to remind myself to link to that in the show notes. I love Webworld so much. God, Galvatron is so awesome and crazy in this. He is so crazy that he out-crazies a whole planet just with his crazy mind. It's so good. And 29 years ago, Divide and Conquer premiered in the U.S. Also a good episode, I guess. If you like that sort of thing. One thing I'll never forget, Divide and Conquer, because of course it was a Family Home Video release. It was one of the episodes they released, and it basically made Laserbeak, that promo made Laserbeak look to be like the most deadly Decepticon ever, and he really kind of was. Honestly, I mean, he was like probably the most effective Decepticon that Megatron had at his command.
Yeah, most confident.
Yeah. And one good thing about the Divide and Conquer is you finally get to see some more of Cybertron. Not a lot, but you got to see kind of where they came from. Of course, it also made the Autobots look totally incompetent without Prime, which I think is a...
They were.
...is a disservice, but... It was still, some physics get a little twinked with acid rain and force shields. But that's all part of the charm.
So, of course, if you don't watch live, you should, because we have an awesome chat at tfradio.net/live and at tformers.com. And I was curious what the general consensus was. And Scaleface had a really good idea. He'd love to see a third party homemade gun for Megatron. Because one of my favorite parts is, I'm just going to go back to Webworld for a second. One of my favorite parts is one of the therapies that Galvatron has to go through is, you know, he just, it's like craft, you know, it's like woodshop or something. He has to go make something to, you know, release this energy, not literal energy, but like emotional energy. And he makes a gun and he starts shooting people with it. Oh, it's so awesome.
And he's wearing a straight jacket that looks like it's made out of strawberry taffy the whole time.
Yes. God, it's such a great episode.
It is. It really... Probably that and Call of the Primitives are two of the strongest episodes in Season 3.
Call of the Primitives is a nice-looking episode. I don't know that it's... I don't really consider it that great of an episode, but it's a nice-looking episode.
Oh, it's a little bit more history.
Yeah. Webworld is my... I guess Webworld is my favorite... but I'm also fond of, like, pretty much all of Season 3. I've talked about that to death. So, let's see here. Let's go ahead and jump to the news for the week. We had quite a few items last week, but not as much this week. And somebody is going to have to sort of help lead me through this, because I heard about this, but I don't know much about it. There was, during the filming of Age of Extinction... the crew was attacked or blackmailed or something. What actually happened there? I mean, I heard about it, but I don't really have any details that I'm familiar with. What happened with that?
Well, the first time a guy was attempting to assault Michael Bay with an air conditioner.
What?
Apparently. I don't know. And this second attempt, the cops showed up. I'm not sure. I don't think this involved an air conditioner this time. But the cops showed up, arrested one man, and three men ran away. So I guess they think... What do they think? They have money on set? Like,
well,
I don't know.
the way the article that I read was painting it out to be is they were looking to... You know, they're running a protection racket. Pay us or we will... Or damage will happen to your sets and stuff. Is what the article that I read is they were basically just trying to be extortionists, you know, protection racket, stuff like that.
See, this is why I guess you shouldn't film in Hong Kong. You should have just stayed in the U.S. and made it look like Hong Kong.
This really isn't helping Hong Kong's international image for movie producers or production.
I mean, I'm not making a movie in Hong Kong now thanks to this.
Yes. And plus, people say we don't have enough Transformers 4 news in the show. So this is for the people who, you know, wanted to hear something about Transformers 4.
Yeah, that's good.
Here it is. It's going to happen.
Oh, and this isn't in the notes, but it's been revealed there's another car that's been pictured that might be the Mirage car from Dark of the Moon.
So what is it? What kind of
it's diecast. It's you remember the red car in Dark of the Moon?
Dino?
Yeah.
Dino was possibly pictured in Hong Kong.
Yep. So that was now the person playing his voice passed away, but we might get another if that is Dino or Mirage, that maybe that's something that popped up.
Yeah, that was the car we didn't think we were going to see again because it was a Ferrari, and we thought the licensing might have been harder to obtain for that. But we'll see. I mean, it's nice to have surprises, and a lot of the Transformers news really isn't worth talking about. But, you know, like I said, we'll find out when the movie comes out. So I'm going to be there opening night. I don't know about you guys. But,
oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'll be there.
Yeah.
I hope I don't swear at the screen like I did at the end of Revenge of the Fallen.
Right, everybody was doing that. That wasn't a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty bad. I literally flipped the screen off and yelled obscenities at it. This was as everyone else in the theater was applauding. I will never forget that.
Run, fall, run, fall, run, fall. Okay, we got it.
One thing of interesting note to me is that we actually now have photos of Creo, Computron, and Minasaur. So at this point, let me pull them up.
These are awesome.
Yeah, they are pretty awesome. Can't get Computron on screen entirely. Having a couple issues with Chrome. Chrome's been a jerk this evening. Chrome has fought me basically every way possible.
So Chrome has been your Massey then?
Yes, that's the case. But Computron looks great. I love Computron unabashedly. I think he's a great combiner. He's not my favorite, but he was, as a kid, he was the one that I was most partial to. We also get Minasaur, which just looks wrong. Just something about it doesn't look right. Here's my problem with these. I'll get them, and they'll never be merged. They'll never be combined because I like my Creons, you know, as Creon. Yeah. And yeah. I know if I combine them, I'll never, you know, break them back down, and I don't want to do that.
Well, it looks like they're doing something a little bit different with the transformation on Minasaur than they did with the other ones. So I think that's why it looks a little off, maybe.
It does. Yeah, it looks off. Maybe a little too much yellow. You know, Minasaur is not... I think Minasaur is a step up from, say, Superion, but when it boils down to it, I think he's probably the most boring of the Scramble City combiners that we got. So as far as G1 combiners, G1 probably, you know, combiners that at least appeared in the TV show, what are we missing at this point? Are we missing anything?
Well, I haven't seen the second wave yet. I've only seen the first wave.
Well,
so
my local in quotes Target has it. I has them. I need to pick them up. I haven't done so yet.
I really like the packaging on them, too. They're small enough that you can just leave them in the package. I didn't even take them out.
Yeah.
Well, if you mean by television show standards, Brian, we should be complete. But there
plus,
is also...
Plus Piranha King. Or, you know, whatever. Yep. But, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, he's out, too.
Yeah, he wasn't in the TV show.
Right.
In G1. I'd like to have a Monstructor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he wasn't either. But we don't have that. Eventually, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they're easy enough for them to make. So
then maybe we might get into like Raiden, and then maybe some of the if I doubt they'll ever go that far. Unfortunately, Creon probably doesn't have that much to go, at least when it comes to Transformers. But I think if we could get a Monstructor or maybe like.
Now, I would buy a Creo Lion Kaiser. I would buy that.
I was thinking MicroMaster stuff.
Ah.
But yeah, no, I mean, anything like that, that would be cool. But yeah, I'm pretty stoked about Computron, but not so much about actually combining it. And I'm gonna buy the Minasaur set, but not much hope for that. I really want, I mean, you know, when I was talking to Rob Clay, when we were actually, the first time we actually met up in Orlando several months ago, his big complaint was with Creo was the lack of diversity. you know, needing more components to make, you know, to make the characters look more like the characters. And it's now that we're four waves, really, if you count the preview wave of the blind bagged figures, plus all of the pack-in figures with the sets, plus the combiners, sometimes it's kind of hard to tell who is who.
Yeah.
You know, it would be nice if we had some, like, added helmets or, you know, other accessories.
Well, one good thing about the Krigo from a collector standpoint is they do go on sale from time to time versus...
Or clearance.
You know, yeah, clearance. Or compared to Lego, that if it goes on sale, it's usually, it's like say, for example, Toys R Us puts Lego on sale, it'll exclude Star Wars or Ninja Turtles or... You know, yeah. their license sets.
Well, Toys R Us haven't been doing that anymore because they learned if they mark everything up like $10 or $15, then they can do like a buy one, get one 40% off, and you're still paying about the same price of what you would if you bought it somewhere else.
I fall in for that.
Yeah. Oh, I fall for it every year. I buy a ton of Lego stuff. But in all reality, I'm probably really not saving anything.
Yeah, I'm not either. Let's see here. I just happened to close out the screen that I needed to be looking at. That's awesome. not Skyfire or Jetfire. We have new photos. It doesn't look any more appealing to me.
This is the second one. This is not
not the same one. God.
Not the same one.
That's why we are now in the third party roundup. Key music.
This is the one that I thought was the first one, but Diecast corrected me last week. This is the second one.
This is the one that I want to purchase. It's a lot more G1 than the other one was. The especially the vehicle mode, to me, is spot on. The only complaint I really have about this figure is it's really... I like the blockiness of it. The only thing that's not blocky is the upper part of the arm, and it just doesn't really fit in. And I don't know if that's the way it was in the show, or that just the upper part of the arm really bothers me. I'm still going to get this because I'm a big Jetfire fan, and someone said it's going to be taller than Masterpiece Prime, and it's like $165. I already pre-ordered it.
I was going to say, if it wasn't for the vehicle mode, I would almost think that this was some sort of official release that we never got, because it's blocky, except for the hands, of course, and some of the other details, but it is blocky. It's kind of boring. It doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking about it, and I'm like, if this wasn't Jetfire, would I be interested in this figure? And probably not, but... The robot, the vehicle mode really, really does it for me.
Mm-hmm. Hey, vehicle mode's nice.
Hey, Diecast, I found a pretty good image from the G1 cartoon of Skyfire. I'm putting it in the chat there. I'll put them in both of them, just so that way you can see the arms if you want to.
Yeah, I mean, they're not the same.
Yeah.
They're close, but the arm they're a little bit too long and a little bit too, like, they're round blocky
it's close enough for horseshoes, basically, I think, but yeah. it's not like you know, entirely super accurate, but it's, I mean, you can tell what it is by looking at it,
but it's closer than what I thought it would look in that first picture, you know. It's
Yeah, no, it's totally true.
Watch out.
So here's a third-party item that I am actually pretty excited about. Not going to buy it, but I think it's a fantastic idea. Micro Blaze Creations MC-002 Voyager size, not Onslaught, basically.
This fixes a lot of the problems I had with the Hasbro Bruticus. Just changing Onslaught into a Voyager size and putting him in there. I mean, the arms fit on better. The legs fit on better. It doesn't look like he's about to fall backwards just from standing straight up. This excites me because I think this gives my Fall of Cybertron, Bruticus, or a chance.
Well, I have to say, you know, seeing these pictures, I think if I was going to get an upgrade kit, I was looking at that Bruticus set that from last week.
Bootylicious?
It was nice, but I believe this would definitely be a preferred item to really help out that mass release Bruticus. And I agree, Brian, if they do a G2 color, I will definitely be there.
It makes me wonder why Hasbro didn't do a Voyager size Onslaught, because in my opinion, Onslaught was the weakest one of the bunch for, you know, the combiner mode. And I keep thinking back to the original Voltron. The Black Lion was the biggest one because he was the center lion. And as a kid, I had all four lions, but I didn't have the center because it was more expensive. So I had to wait till like Christmas to get it. And that was like one of my big Christmas gifts. But I was so happy because I could finally form Voltron.
You know, I like that boosted cassette for what it did. But I believe instead of all the extra add-on pieces that become the trailer, just having the Voyager size Onslaught will take care of a lot of that too.
I think it's a better fix. I really do. I think the Boosticus add-on kit was putting a hat on a piece of crap.
I've done that.
Really. I mean, but this fixes the issues that I had with it. So I will pick this up if it comes out.
But I do kind of like, this is weird, I do like the Boosticus defeat just a little better, because that looks like he's wearing roller skates, and the Boosticus was just like giant Autobot stomping boots is what it looked like. It's weird, I know, but...
So the girl has a double D rack, and you're looking at her shoes.
Well, the thing for some reason, what popped in my head when I saw the Boosticus set was Weasel Stomping Time. That Weird Al did for Animaniacs. I think it was Animaniacs. I can't remember. I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm wrong. It's just, I just like the way the feet fixes look better, but that's still, you know, eminently fine.
Yeah. I mean, an Onslaught looks nice too, just as a robot by himself. Yeah. So.
And the vehicle does look more, a lot more Onslaught-ish than what we got in the FOC set.
Yeah.
You know, it still has the same basic aesthetic, but it looks like it would actually shoot you versus make you laugh.
That's much better. Let's go ahead and jump to part two of our Jim Sorensen interview. Like I said, Jim, this go-around talks about the art of Prime. And after that, we'll jump to Q&A with Rob Springer, comic news, and all of that jazz. We will be back right after this.
You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
In late November, December-ish, The Art of Prime is coming out. And I know, yeah, a lot of people have been looking forward to that.
I am really psyched about that one. And I, in terms of the 30th anniversary, I realized that anthologies aren't for everyone. I tried to make it so that, you know, I might entice you if it's not. And if you're a completionist who just buys everything, then you'll be able to buy it and there'll be a lot of new material for you. But The Art of Prime is just a book that I just unabashedly, unreservedly just love. And really think that just about any Transformers fan is going to be able to pick this up and really sink their teeth into it, unless you just hate Prime. And I'm sure there's a lot of Transformers fans out there. I'm sure there's a few of you out there that just want nothing to do with Prime, in which case probably you shouldn't buy this book. But otherwise, I mean, I think it's a really special book. The Chris Mowry and his team were doing the production side of it, you know, putting together the look of it. And he just hit it out of the park. It's a beautiful looking tome. I was able to go to the Hasbro Studios in Burbank and interview about 8 of the different creative folks involved in putting it together, including the 4 department heads that are really responsible for the overall look and feel of the show, and then 4 more of the individual artists, including one of the guys, Daniel Park, who won an Emmy for his work on the show, and actually one of the department heads, Christoph Atcher, also I think won 2 Emmys for his work on the show out of the overall 7. So and just the idea that the show's won 7 Emmys, and I think they're going to get another at bat this year is pretty amazing.
Is that more than Beast Wars got?
You know, I'm not sure.
It probably is. I think so.
I feel like it probably is.
That's impressive. That's really amazing. And you know, Prime is really picked up with season 3 with Beast Hunters. It's a great looking series. Even if you don't like this, you know, the story, it's especially in HD, it's just phenomenal looking.
Yeah. And yeah, the visuals in the show are spectacular, and it made my life. And I guess. Yeah, I probably shouldn't speak for Chris Mallory, but I'm going to assume his life much easier to have such a surfeit of wonderful, rich, detailed material to work with. I'm kind of flipping through the book. I have a proofing PDF of the book right now, and just every page is just chock full of all these great images. And I can't even take credit for a lot of it. A lot of it is that, you know, that the team producing the show produced such great character designs, sets, matte paintings, props, all of those sort of elements that I was able to draw from. And it's such a varied book. I mean, even if you look at something like, certainly something like The Ark, but even something like The Allspark Almanac, and I love The Allspark Almanacs. I'm really proud of the work we did. I love how, you know, quirky and in-universe they are. But if you look at the artwork, it's a lot less varied than what you're seeing here. It feels like it's all sort of in the same style. There's a little bit of black and white, but mostly it's sort of the really nice, you know, Derek Wyatt sort of cartoony views. You know, there's some of the backgrounds, but when you flip through the Prime book, and you'll hopefully be able to see that when we start posting some promo pages, and then when the actual book comes out in a month or two, but there's so much variety. You know, sometimes you have a color character model on a black, you know, on a sort of grayscale background. There's a lot of black and white turnaround. Sometimes the characters are in an environment, like, you know, the Ratchet vehicle mode is sort of in a sort of high-tech futuristic environment. I'm looking at, who am I looking at right now? I'm looking at Dreadwing right now, and he's sort of, you know, the character model for his jet is actually him sort of flying with a shadow against clouds. So all that variety just makes it really visually stimulating when you flip through the book, because, you know, I think the title is telling. You know, this is the art of Prime. This is an art book. The Allspark Almanacs, you know, we called them an almanac because we wanted to sort of emphasize that it was something a little bit different. Yeah, there's a lot of art. I mean, art is probably the focus of those books, but the art, it's just one sort of element, and it's not necessarily the primary element. I think that the text was really important there too. Not that the text isn't important here, but here really we wanted to focus on how pretty everything was, how beautiful it was, and what text there is generally is in support of that. So there's very, very little setting the context. There's only setting the context for a piece when we absolutely had to. So if I show an image and I felt like, even if you were a pretty decent Transformers fan who'd seen most of the episodes, you might look at this and say, I have no idea what I'm looking at. In that case, I'd say, okay, this is what you're looking at. But for the most part, if it's a character like Optimus Prime, if it's a set like the Autobot headquarters, I didn't spend a lot of time saying, this is Optimus Prime. He's the leader of the Autobots. We went right to the designer of Optimus Prime talking about why he made the choices he made, you know, what influenced those sort of decisions. And I think that narrow focus really makes the book a very quick but a very engaging read, as well as something that's just a lot of fun to flip through.
So with this book, I take it this is one you probably did you push for this one, or was this one like, hey, why don't you do this book about the art of Prime? Was this something that you had to work hard to get, or was Hasbro and everyone really accommodating with this?
Funny story. I've been pushing for this book for, I guess, about 3 years, since before the show actually aired, because I mentioned him earlier, the visual effects art director and lighting supervisor, Christoph Vacher, the guy who won the two Emmys. I know him outside of Transformers a little bit. So when I found out what he was doing on the show, I was really excited. And I said, I'd love to, I showed him some of the works that I'd done previously. And I said that I'd really love to do an art book for this. And he was a big advocate internally. So I brought it up to the producers of Prime a few times and to IDW. And it was, generally in publishing, you don't, if you're in the industry, you don't so much get a no when you propose things. You get a maybe at some point. It's later. It's never really an absolute no. It's usually a, let's think about that, but not for right now. So I got a lot of that for Prime. And once you get a few of those sort of pushbacks, you stop bringing it up as much. You might still mention it, but you'd push newer things that you think might be more exciting. So I'd kind of hit that point in Transformers Prime. And I also knew the show was ending, which usually once the show starts to end, Hasbro loses interest a bit and wants to focus on some of the newer properties that they have coming out. So the timing seemed like it was going off. So I stopped pushing it as much. And then they came to me and said, Hasbro is really keen to do this. So let's go for it. So I'm pretty sure the advocating I'd done over the years helped make it an easy decision for them to give the book to me as opposed to somebody else. So I guess it's both. I'd been advocating for it for a while, but then I stopped and then Hasbro came to me. So...
Did you get any material out of this that we haven't seen before, like on screen?
Well, I mean, for the most part, you haven't seen any of the production material.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So,
not sure if that's what you.
I meant anything that maybe stuff that might have landed on the cutting room floor, characters we never got to see, anything like that.
Not a whole lot like that. Especially with the CG show, it's so expensive to
that makes sense.
Produce that there's not a whole lot that they produce that doesn't get used. There's probably little snippets here and there. But with the Allspark Almanacs, we had sort of the aborted season 4. So we had, quite a lot of sketches for that and list of what sort of the episodes might have been. Nothing like that for Prime, because I think Prime, pretty much they were able to tell the story that they wanted to tell. Which is good. It was kind of exciting for me because I started putting this book together probably round about June. So I got to see the animatics for Predacons Rising and have all the character models and sets and backgrounds for that well long before the show, the movie aired. So that was kind of neat for me. I had signed an NDA. Yeah. I can talk about it now because it's out. But I signed an NDA, so I was at I think Auto Assembly, and then somebody asked a question about Predacons Rising, and I had to I really can't talk about that at all. But it's not my secret to tell. But that was kind of fun just for me on a personal level.
That's pretty cool. So
in fact, the show hadn't even quite finished. When I was working on the book, they were still, in the very final days. So they're airing episodes, 310, 311, 312, 313. So I keep wondering to myself, when are Dark Steel and Skylink's going to show up?
So did we know that Predacons Rising was coming before the series ended? I don't recall.
I believe we did. I think that's been out for a while.
Okay, because I didn't know if you were had this knowledge of the series isn't just ending, we're getting this later on. That's pretty awesome.
So I think we already knew that, and I didn't actually, I was able to finish watching the show before my deadline for the book was done, so I was kind of just watching the. I didn't push for them to give me early access to any of that, since I figure I can wait. It's not going to materially impact what I'm working on too much. But then I got to the end of the show and I realized, and I knew Predacons Rising was coming, but I said, okay, well, I have, these two characters, character designs for these two new Predacons that haven't showed up. So obviously they're for the movie and a bunch of sets. And I said, okay, I don't know what the context is for this. I can't really write about it unless I do. So I kind of bug the producers over there, and then they sent me an animatic, and they actually plastered my name all above, so it's watermarked like right across the center, you know, Jim Sorensen, you know, whatever the date was. So they were obviously didn't want that getting out.
Yeah, you don't, definitely not. Would you describe this book as sort of like a high-res CG version of like the field manual then, sort of? Or the ARC?
You know, I think it's its own entity. The ARC books and the field manuals, which are obviously very, the G.I. Joe field manuals, which are very similar to the ARC books in aesthetic, they're much more regular. They're they tend to focus along the characters, and for G.I. Joe the vehicles, you know, a little bit of for Joe, a little bit of the biographical or the technical data for the data for the vehicles. This is much more of an art book. I would say those are in some ways, I guess the ARC book is kind of an art book. You know, the ARC book is technically an art book. It certainly focuses on the art. It's a large collection of the character models. But what that really was very specifically a way to preserve and share the Sunbow character models. This is much more, I think, about celebrating the artwork.
That makes sense.
To the extent that we had to, you know, for this book, I left a lot of material on the proverbial cutting room floor that you were talking about earlier. Because in some cases, you know, I think with the ARCs and to a lesser extent the Almanacs, you know, it was more important that I get as much material in as I could. Whereas with this, I was okay with having less material as long as it presented the material in the best possible light. Not that it's not chock full of material, it really is. But, you know, in this book, you know, we devote some pages to 2-page spreads just because the material needed it. That we could have instead, if we wanted to, had it on, you know, because if you can kind of visualize the book, a 2-page spread, if you shrink it down, is going to be, you know, about half of one page.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, most of the matte paintings wound up being these really, right at the back of the book, these, you know, 2-page spreads. And they're just really beautiful to look at. And yeah, if I'd shrunk them down, I probably could have gotten about 4 extra pages of things like, you know, the turnarounds for the, you know, alternate styles of the Viacons, you know, because there were more than one set of Viacons. And I said, you know, we can live with just having the turnaround of one style of Viacon. That's fine. And those sort of decisions. We can not have the Insecticon arm cannon with associated transformation, you know, little things like that. You know, it informed those sort of decisions.
Okay.
Jim, one thing I wanted to ask is one of the reasons I enjoyed Prime, being one of the older fans, I grew up watching Reboot and then Shadow Raiders and then Beast Wars. So I've seen CGI come from its base beginnings up until what we have now. And part of the reason Prime was so enjoyable for me was not just the overall look, but also the humans and the way they got the humans to be so fluid. That, you know, looking as good as they did. So were you able to cover any of the human designs?
Absolutely. I mean, every character, you know, every important character in the show is in the book. So every Autobot, every Decepticon, and all the main humans we'd
except want. For Miko, right?
No, Miko. Obviously we left Miko out. They're just, you know, like, there's no only kidding. So much room in the book, and we had to leave someone out.
I'm sorry, Don. I'm sorry.
It's okay. No, it's just, a lot of people don't want humans in their Transformer stories, but I feel like you have to, if they're done right.
They should watch more than meets the eye. I mean, you know, they've been there since the beginning.
Yeah.
No, there's a whole chapter. Chapter 3 is called Humans and Props. Chapter 1 was Autobots, Chapter 2 is Decepticons, 3 is Humans and Props. That was sort of the character design portion of the book. That's part 1. I can talk about the organizational structure a bit. So, you know, there's a nice, you know, page for Jack. You get to see his main character design and color. You get the turnarounds. You get his expressions. Jack, you have in a spacesuit. You know, you have Fowler. You have Raph. You have, you know, obviously we had to leave Miko out. But, you know, we have June. we have Mech and Silas. I mean, the characters that you'd want in the book, you have in the book. So, yeah,
so for people buying this book, he's joking. Unless you don't like Miko, then he's serious.
No, obviously Miko's in the book. But
So that's coming out in December. What do you have after that? What do you have on the horizons as far as projects? Anything you can talk about?
Yeah, sure. The next one, the next big Transformers one is Transformers Legacy. And that's one we actually announced a couple of years ago at BotCon, and then we sort of had some some production delays. But we're now back on the schedule for sort of spring 2014 of the Transformers box art book.
Excited. And that's gonna
be another one.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty psyched about this. It's going to be one of the nice things about The Art of Prime was that it's an oversized hardcover high format, and we're doing the same thing with the box art, and actually the page count's even higher.
Ooh, that's awesome.
Because we have a lot of material. When I started working on this, we didn't have a lot of really high quality material. We had sort of the Japanese laser discs that had come out that we'd scanned in and cleaned up, which are actually pretty decent. They're not horrible, but they're not great. And since I've done that, I've been able to coordinate with individual fans who have some of this material, with Hasbro, with Rick Alvarez when he was over there, with some of the folks at Takara, to get as much of the original artwork or original photo negatives or chrome positives. So basically, we're either dealing with the original artwork or first generation scans of it that were done back in the photographs that were done back in the 80s. And consequently, the quality on this on the artwork that we found is just phenomenal. And the scope in terms of what we've been able to locate is really breathtaking. We have almost everything from G1 from the US and Japan, and quite a lot from G2 as well. I can't guarantee everything will make it into the book. We're still in the process of doing the layouts, but in terms of what we have available to us, we're only missing like a handful of guys. We're missing maybe half the Action Masters, and then Quick Mix, Galvatron's lower quality than we'd like, Trypticon. I think we're missing the US version. We have the Japanese version, the Dinosaur, but there really aren't many guys we're missing. And from Japan, it's the same thing. We're missing like the Dino cassettes and the Japanese variation of the Rocket Base, but we have almost everything. And
that's amazing.
It's really fun for me that we were able to do that. Sadly, we don't have much from the UK. That material is group elusive, so that's probably not. We'll probably have one or two pages about where we mentioned, and in the United Kingdom and Europe, they also had artwork, and we'll show. we have enough to do that. We have the UK version of Overlord, which is pretty neat, and some other guys. So we can probably do it like a little two page spread where we acknowledge that it exists, but that's about as much as we can do for there. But for the US and Japan G1, we can just do page after page after page. We have some material that was unused, which is kind of neat. That one, we don't have any of that for Prime because I don't think they produced anything that they didn't use. But some guys, some Japanese guys that they were thinking about for a U.S. release that got some new artwork that we didn't use, and some color variations and some stuff like that. Some of the stuff you've probably already seen, like the unused G2 stuff. You can see some unused G2 Dinobots and Diaclone cars. If you search online, you can probably find some of that artwork. But
I'm really excited about this.
I was at BotCon 94. I saw most of the unused G2 stuff that we never got.
Yeah.
Because they had carded samples for Sergeant Hound and General Prime and the GoBot Racing Rig. They had all the card art there of what it would look like, but there was no photograph, so all we have is our memories, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I don't have all of that, but I have some of that material, which is pretty neat. Some of the spy, I guess they were called GoBots, the G2 GoBots that they had. I have some of the unused artwork for those guys. That's kind of fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is.
You know what you got to do after this? You have to do like an anthology of the read-along books. Yeah, I'm half joking, but somebody would buy that. I would buy that.
So somebody would buy that, doubtlessly. I just don't know how many somebodies would buy that. I try not to pitch books to IDW that aren't going to sell out of their print line.
I will buy two copies.
I promise you. We're almost halfway to profitability right there.
I'm going to have to pass because I was horrible at those books. I always picked the worst ending.
Oh, actually, yeah, just reprint all the Find Your Fate Junior books. That would be great.
No, I feel like Find Your Fate is something that would work much better as a web page than as a book.
Yeah.
I believe in finding the right medium for the material. And I think Find Your Fate, that's one where you want to, you know, you put it up on the website, you navigate through. That's how you do that sort of book. I think books aren't designed for Find Your Fate.
I had two Find Your Fate books, and the second one that I had was misprinted. So basically it told the same thing over and over and over again. As like a six-year-old, that just confused the hell out of me. It was years later after I read it, I'm like, oh, no wonder this never made sense. It was bound incorrectly. So, but yeah, I would totally buy, you know, just saying that I would buy that. So you have Legacy coming out next year, spring, Art of Prime coming out late November, early December-ish, 30th anniversary collection came out in August. Anything else you're working on? Anything not Transformers related?
Well, I'm working on a, with Palladium Books, on a Robotech role-playing game supplement for the Zentradi. So that's kind of fun for me to get something that's not a Hasbro property in there. You know, just diversify the resume. I'm a big Robotech fan, so it's kind of fun. And I'm a role player, so it's kind of fun for me to get my beak wet in that arena.
That's awesome. You have, like, weekly D&D sessions. I'm, like, bi-monthly, and it makes me very sad.
These days, my gaming is largely the Battlestar Galactica Cortex role-playing game.
Ah, I basically just do D&D. I'm not that into it. I'm an neophyte.
I used to tabletop Battletech many years ago. When they had lead miniatures, I could kill you.
They had lead miniatures?
Yeah. Before they switched to a composite, they actually miniatures were made of lead.
Oh, yeah. I have some old D&D miniatures made of lead that one of my cousins gave me.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive. And they're the fun ones, too. It's like, you know, black puddings and beholders and, you know, the sort of fun, you know, D&D-specific creatures.
So, Jim, how do people reach you? Is it boltax.blogspot.com? Is that how you get to it?
That's my blog. I've been a little remiss in updating it recently. I was in the late stages of a pregnancy, and now I'm in the early stages of parenthood. So that's been taking up more of my time than it had been before, unsurprisingly. So I haven't been as diligent about updating the blog. Also, I'm more or less out of the Transformers character models that I'd been sharing on a weekly basis. I have quite a lot of G.I. Joe material.
Post that. I'll look at it.
I've been posting that, and I get a little bit of feedback from it, but I haven't gotten the same level of enthusiasm, which means it's a little harder for me to keep up my enthusiasm.
Gotcha.
So I can still do it, and I'm trying. But and actually, the other thing is that with the G.I. Joe material, the G.I. Joe fan club has been pretty interested in printing some of that.
Oh, great.
But I'm a little reluctant to put too much of it up on the web when, you know, it's something that I might be able to share with a larger audience and in a more permanent format.
Yeah,
web always feels very transient to me.
Since Google Reader died, I've not been good about keeping up on my blogs. I need to use like Feedly or something to keep up with things. I've been really bad. That's awesome though, that the Collectors Club is interested in that. I need to renew my membership for the Joe Collectors Club. I've been a bad fan, so.
Yeah, I think December I've got a 4-page article about the I guess I could probably say what it is. I did the Sergeant Slaughter's Renegades.
Oh, sweet.
So that was kind of fun. That was one where I got their character models after the Field Manual 2, the G.I. Joe Field Manual 2 came out. So I said, damn it, I really, really like to have gotten them in. So at least I was able to find something of a home for them.
That's cool. Awesome. Well, Jim, thank you very much for being on.
Well,
thank you.
Thanks for having me.
You boys a bit bored? Snap me to it! Snap me to a Slim Jim!
Hey guys, it's Rob. And this week's question comes from our friend Aaron E. Doyle. Aaron E. Doyle asks, seeing the new Iger Con Air Seekers, do you think third-party companies start hurting themselves with the prices they charge? Well, thanks for your question, Aaron. And I think it's going to start hurting them, truthfully. And I'm not saying it being a negative nanny or negative nanny, what is that? Being some negative person or coming down on third parties. Excuse me. I think the I'm subscribing that the third party situation is starting to get out of control, being that there's a ton of stuff coming out all the time. And while it's great for people who like that stuff, and let's face it, they make some cool things. there's so much third-party product coming out, and at such a premium price, some of these companies are going to have to start kind of lowering those prices if they want to remain competitive. Because it's going to seem like an overwave. I mean, when people say the third-party bubble is going to pop, this is what they mean. There's too much product, no one can buy it all, and they feel overwhelmed, and they'll just go, no. And then these companies are so small, you know, say no one buys these, one of these 60 Predakings coming out, you know, well, those companies may not have the revenue to make another toy. And I'm not saying that to say, hey, buy it or they won't make anything else. I'm saying that to be like, that's the reality of the situation. And if you say, I think companies are starting to hurt themselves, yeah. When this whole thing started up, they were getting away with it because they're charging a premium price for a premium product that people obviously wanted to buy. Now there's competition. And the problem with competition is you have to remain competitive. And there's going to be a point where people say, you know what, I don't want to spend this much on this. Especially now that the thing was, they're small fan-made productions. You know, there's maybe a run of maybe 1,000 or so toys at most. And it's very expensive to have this done, and people accepted it. We're getting more and more informed about 3D printing, and it's becoming more commonplace. So we know it's the initial tooling may be not as expensive as we thought. As well as, let's face it, there's so many of these companies making so much product, they are not taking too much of a hit in development time, I don't think. I mean, it's just, they could be. And according to rumor, a lot of these companies, there's a handful of them, and some of the companies are multiple fronts for their businesses. Like, one company that puts out this and one company puts out this is all under the same company umbrella for one company. If that made sense. And that would make a lot of sense, because that way it's like, okay, they get made to legally shut down this company. Will they still go on with this one? And that makes sense to me. But yeah, I think they're going to start hurting themselves. And I'm among the people who think that third-party bubble is going to pop pretty soon. Not because I'm hating on third parties. It's just the market's getting saturated with extremely expensive product, and a lot of it. And that's when stuff starts taking a dive. So, you know, Keith's Fantasy Club, the KFC guys, whoever it really is. Maybe it's someone else with a side company. I don't know. And I don't care. They make those cassettes. And they're pretty fairly priced. You know, they're like $20 a cassette. Which sounds expensive till you realize a Masterpiece cassette is $30 a piece. If you buy one of those Takara 2-packs, it is $60 for two figures. Cassettes. And these are the same size and meant to be unofficial Masterpiece cassettes to fill out the roster of cassette guys. How many more times can I say cassette in a sentence? Cassette, one more time. Prism. You know, they're 20. That's not bad. That's a very affordable price. And I know, being that they're cassettes, you know, it's okay. But, you know, the larger figures, like the mini-bots or whatever, 30, 40, you know, is scraping the line of a fair price. When they started shooting up to 60 or so, it's like, hey. And people are like, well, maybe it's more expensive. No, they know you'll pay it. I mean, that's just it. People criticize fun publications for the prices they charge. And they say they really not need to stop charging so much. And you stop and say, why? People are buying it. They're selling out. Same with these third-party companies. They're going to charge whatever they want to charge because they know they'll get paid. And they'll say, oh, it's a small production and we need to cover our costs. And people go, okay. And people are buying these things, so they have no reason not to. But if that bubble pops and people stop buying it, they're going to have to lower those prices if they want to continue to stay in business with that model. And that's reality. That's the real.
Radio Free Cybertron.
Transformers.
Rewind.
This week on Transformers Rewind, it's Garbage In, Garbage Out, from Transformers Animated.
Greetings, life! I am Wreck-Gar, Wreck-Gar the Autobot. I will protect you!
You're supposed to be working on our people skills, remember?
You're also supposed to catch the bad guy!
Right, catch bad guy.
Well, don't just sit there. You still want that ride, or what?
We'll call a cab.
Not even a thank you.
Do you like Weird Al? You like Transformers? Pretty much your episode. I know you love this episode, Melvar. Tell us why you love this episode so much.
Oh, I love this episode so very, very much. Just for all the callbacks to G1. I mean, you get Weird Al doing the voice because we're... of Wreck-Gar because of the scene in Transformers the movie where the Junkions were introduced and they were playing Dare to Be Stupid by Weird Al Yankovic in the background. We get to see Spike and Carly. We get to see the universal greeting. It's a wonderful episode, and I watch it over and over again.
This is a fondly remembered episode of Animated. I don't think most people hold it up as the best episode of Animated, but I don't know of anybody that hates it, except for Diecast.
This was my first episode of Animated, and this episode does not make me want to go back and watch any Animated.
Get off this podcast now.
Goofy, it was...
Diecast, time out.
Totally stupid.
Time out, Diecast. Animated is awesome in all ways that are possible to be awesome.
Yes.
And Don, I know you have to be pretty fond of this episode, if not.
Yeah, I am, just because it's nice to get a ratchet focus episode that's not all, you know, grim and dirty and, you know, flashback to the war. It's present day. It builds on the mythos. You get to see more of the city outside just the tower and everything else. It's just, and also, you know, you can tell this was written for the fans in mind to a degree, because you've got him doing the universal greeting. You've got Lugnut using the poke, the punch of kill everything, you know. So it's just basically a leather says, we know you like Weird Al. Here's a whole episode with him. Enjoy. And the Wreck-Gar toy is not a bad toy. So it really just is a fun episode. But, you know, like Diecast said, it may not be the one you want to show people to get them hooked on Animated.
It doesn't really do a lot of anything to push the series along.
It was just a fun episode. I love how they made, because he was made out of a pile of junk, they just kind of made him scatterbrained. Like, he would believe anything you told him. It was very entertaining to me.
Plus, we got a little more of the Angry Archer, which is always fun.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. This was a Marty episode, and, you know, Marty, of course, was... We loved the Marty episodes in Prime, but he was, like, the man at Animated. This is just... It's just a well-paced, well-written, fun episode. I really like it. I don't have any complaints about it, so to speak, other than it really doesn't do a lot to push the series along. But again, this is only the 19th or 20th episode or something. So it's
it was a filler episode in the grander sense of things, but it was a fun one.
Yeah. But things were going to be getting dark and darker sooner rather than later. So it was nice to have some fun before things got a little, you know, heavy. But I actually had to go back and rewatch it originally when it came on. When I found it online, because I did not know he had his G1 motorcycle was thrown at Bumblebee. I did not see that until after the fact. I had to go back and find that. And I thought that's it.
I don't remember when I actually watched this episode originally, because I was busy working toward getting married when this episode came on. God, this was over 5 years ago. But God, I've been married for 5 years. That's crazy. But I've watched this episode several times, and it never gets old.
I mean, if there's one good thing I have to say about the episode, I guess it was interesting how Rekkar was not only the villain in the episode, but he was also an Autobot. So.
Oh, you would love it. The stuff they do with the Constructicons and everything. I'm not going to say the characters are ambiguous. Because
there's a gray area there.
Yeah, it's not like Breaking Bad, where Walt is simultaneously the hero and the villain. Or you could look at it both ways. It's like a Rorschach test. But it's more gray in animated. Animated is such an excellent series.
Yeah, it's. A lot of people put off with the designs of the toys and stuff, but if you look at the show just from a pure entertainment standpoint, it's well written, well directed. It's just a lot of fun.
It is all over the place, and sorry, Diecast, it is not the place where you want to jump into the series for the first time. I will say that.
Yeah, like when I first watched the pilot made for TV movie or miniseries, it didn't hook me like I thought it would. But it's just one of those things that you watch it, and you watch a couple episodes, and you really get into it. I know several people who aren't Transformers fans who just Saturday mornings just happened to be, up with their kids or something, and started watching the show and really, really got into it. It's if it's not the best Transformers series, it's the second best Transformers series, better than Prime.
I like Prime.
It's better than Prime.
Warning. The following segment may contain spoilers for the most recent Transformers comic books.
So here I am once again, talking Transformers comic news on my iPad from my car. Out this week, we're going to have Regeneration 195. But we're also going to be getting Autocracy Motion Picture issue number 9. Now it's going to be wrapping up in a few weeks, so... Definitely keep your eye out if that is what you're following is the motion comic. So, New York Comic Con news. There wasn't a lot that came out of New York Comic Con, but just a little trickle of stuff here and there. The big thing to come out of New York Comic Con news was the Transformer G.I. Joe crossover that was announced. Now, it's going to be co-written by Tom... I'm going to mess this guy's name up, and I apologize because I don't know anything that he's done. Tom Scully and John Barber, and it will be coming out summer of 2014. Now, I have only just briefly read a few of the crossovers, especially the G.I. Joe crossovers, but it's been a while, and it escapes my memory. My reaction to it was mostly positive, but I've also heard some... not so good things about a certain Marvel crossover that there was. So I don't really have an opinion one way or the other if I like it or if I dislike it, but I'm willing to kind of just, I know that John, I've liked a lot of the stuff that John has written, so, and I don't know anything about what Tom has written, so I'm pretty much willing to just wait until I see it, until I decide one way or the other if I like this idea of Transformers G.I. Joe crossover. I've heard both positive and negative, so I'm quite literally, I just have absolutely no opinion for it. And I'm not against looking at it and seeing it when it comes out. So we'll see in summer of 2014 how that all turns out. So this week we have a few birthdays. Guido Guidi is having a birthday, so if you see him online, definitely say hi and happy birthday. But we also have Josh Burcham celebrating his birthday as well in the middle of the week, and Chris Carter, who will be celebrating his as well. So to all three of these guys, they're all artists that have worked on Transformers in one form or another, either current or in the past, and just definitely give them all a huge shout out and a happy birthday. So yay! Newsarama did a video from New York Comic Con of a video interview of Margrid, Scott, Andrew Griffith, and Livio Ramondelli. And I think some links are floating around. If not, you just go to newsarama.com and check it out from New York Comic Con. They didn't really reveal anything huge in it. It's like 10 minutes long. And they pretty much just asked about different artistic choices and writing choices. And who their favorite character is, and a few little challenges. It was just like a brief little peek into these three artists, writers that are working on Transformers. So definitely check it out. It was a nice little interview. It was a great it was just great little peek because you could see New York Comic Con behind it. And yeah, it was good. It was good. So, Graphic Policy did an interview with John Barber where they asked 10 different questions, and Ted Adams tweeted it out. So I threw it in here. But I read it earlier today, and they basically tease how the comic got in as the Packins, where they might be going with that in the future, some cross-promoting comics and other media. And then they talked, which I thought was kind of interesting, because Graphic Media recently did a study on how many male-to-female fans there are in the Transformers fandom. And it turns out to be 60% male and 40% female, at least according to Facebook. Now, they got some reactions from John on this, too, so I thought it was kind of interesting. But definitely a nice little interview, 10 questions, definitely go check it out on graphicpolicy.com. Anybody out there who has read Last Stand of the Wreckers, and if you're a fan like me that has been asking, hey, you know, it'd be great if we did this animation of Last Stand of the Wreckers, because we've been kind of, quite a few fans have been suggesting it for a while. Well, they may have gotten a step closer to doing that someday, because IDW Publishing has now launched a company called IDW Entertainment. Now, I haven't read all of the details on this, but first impressions, yay. But also, real reality check is that it could just be that they're expanding and they might get a little bit of something, but we might not really get that. But who knows? In a couple years, maybe we could have Last Stand of the Wreckers as an animation. So not that I'm saying that we have to or that's what this is doing, but it's just, they're branching out a little bit, so I thought I'd put it in the news. They haven't announced specifically what they will. I didn't really read all of it. I just kind of browsed through it really quick just to see if Last Stand of the Wreckers was, you know, mentioned, and of course it wasn't. But it's okay, because like I said, they did the IDW games. Now they're doing entertainment. It's just expanding, and we'll see how they do with that. And of course, if I hear any news, I let everybody know about it, of course. Alex Milne has continued to lavish the fandom with concept art, the last one being Thunderclash. But you can check out all of his wonderful artistic creations at DeviantArt. But he also has a Tumblr now, so all of you fans of Tumblr, all of you people that are hanging out there, you can find him on Tumblr now, too. And last, but certainly not least, we have the January 2014 solicits. So, let's see what 2014 has in store for us. Now, all of Dark Cybertron will be co-written with James Roberts and John Barber. So I'm not going to go and say who the writer is to each of these. More Than Meets the Eye and Robots in Disguise. All part of Dark Cybertron, the next 6 months, at least starting in November, will be co-written by James and John. So, and what we got this time round in the solicits was pretty much, we've got all the Casey covers that have been teased, but we don't have all of the Phil Jimenez variant covers. Those are still going to be there. I don't know what they look like. And so all of the covers look fantastic. I love Casey's stuff, so completely works for me. But yeah, just to kind of put it out there, in case somebody, this is their first time listening to this and they don't know anything about it, that's why I pretty much put it in there. So subscription customers, get a hold of your local comic shops to find out how you can get a hold of those Phil Jimenez covers. So Transformers More Than Meets the Eye, issue number 25, which is Dark Cybertron Chapter 6, will be out in January. It says, a hero falls and one returns. The struggle in the dead universe heats up as Orion Pax, the bot who once was Optimus Prime, and Rodimus struggle with the legacy of Primes. Meanwhile, the Lost Light is under attack in deep space, and Shockwave and the terrifying Necro Titan threaten Cybertron. We have three different artists on both this and Robots in Disguise. We've got Attilio Rojo, James Reyes, and Livio Ramondelli. It's definitely going to be interesting. We've got something called a Necro Titan. Metro Titan, now Necro Titan. I'm guessing that the idea that it's got Necro in it makes me think like something that's been raised from the dead. You know, it sounds kind of like necromancy or something like that. But yeah, kind of looking forward to that. Looking forward to seeing what that is going to have for us. Robots in Disguise, issue 25 in January. This will be Dark Cybertron Part 7 or Chapter 7. What lies beneath? Ultra Magnus leads what's left of the Lost Light crew deep into the last place they ever thought they'd be. And they find the last Cybertronians they ever expected to find. Meanwhile, Megatron versus Galvatron, round one. Okay, I have to say, I am a little thrilled about the idea of seeing Megatron versus Galvatron, even in the IDW G1 verse. So, yeah, kind of looking forward to that. Really kind of looking forward to that. So, again, I will tease covers, and at this point, you've probably already seen them. I don't have them in front of me because my teleprompter is paper today. So we'll also be getting Transformers Regeneration 1, issue number 98. Again, Simon Furman writing, Guido Guidi as our artist, and Andrew Wildman and Guido are going to be giving us some covers. So, Invasion, and it's the Autobots doing the invading. Rodimus Prime takes action, leading an armada into the heart of Gyhaxis' forces. But is he playing straight into the villain's hands? Plus, Fortress Maximus re-enters the fray, but on whose side? Oh, and Starscream's past comes back to haunt him. Big time. I'm looking forward to seeing how Regeneration is going to wrap up, especially after today's issue. And I'm not going to go into all of my thoughts on it since we've already got a team that's going to be reviewing that. But if you are interested, I do run the Underbase, and I've got my thoughts and how I felt about this issue and my cohorts as well over there on the Underbase as well put out what they thought about it as well. So if you're interested, you can go to theunderbase.libsyn.com. We will also be getting Transformers Regeneration 1, issue number 3. In January as well. It will be collecting issues 91 through 95 and the Zero issue. The Zero issue as well. So, yeah, it's just speeding along. So, last and certainly not least, and I would have completely overlooked this if somebody else had not pointed it out to me, but in January, we've done in the past where we've had Infestation. And for a while there, I thought that we probably weren't going to be having it because no one has announced Infestation. But we are going to have a crossover in January, and it's going to come from an unlikely place. I did not expect this, but the X-Files has taken over this little event. They're calling it the X-Files Conspiracy Number 1 of 2. We're going to be getting a crossover in January. So this is what it says. The event of the year begins here. When the Lone Gunmen discover internet files from the future, they learn that a plague will soon wipe out most of humanity. With agents Mulder and Scully working one lead, the gunmen must spring into action and investigate several urban legends. A group of ghost hunters, mutant turtles that live in the sewers, shape-changing alien robots, and a vengeful spirit from the grave. It will be written by Paul Crilly. I'm probably butchering these names, so I apologize in advance. And then John Stansky, I'm guessing. Wow, okay. So I haven't seen anybody else really talk about this, so I'm kind of glad that I saw it. Like I said, it had to get pointed out to me because I wasn't really paying attention to it. But yeah, we will be getting a crossover with infestation / conspiracy material. So there you go. And that's out in January. So yeah, a lot of little great news bits that we've got this month for January. I'm looking forward to it and roll on 2014. And that's pretty much the news. So we'll catch you next time.
Okay, so Regeneration 195.
Yep.
The number that comes after zero.
Apparently so.
We've beaten that joke down a little bit so far, but...
A little bit. It's an issue of Regeneration 1. Unfortunately, it is much more an issue of Regeneration 1 than Zero was.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, I mean, it seems like nothing was really changed editorially between the decision to have an issue Zero or not.
Yeah, about the only evidence of issue Zero happening is that John Paul Bove went ahead and colored the four panels that refer to issue Zero like the corresponding sections of issue Zero. That's the only way you can tell it even happened.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think those flashback panels themselves need to have like the context of issue Zero because, I mean, that's stuff that can be explain later through just exposition. You know, right now it's just vague foreshadowing.
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, it's only the coloring that even lets you know that happened, because if that issue hadn't happened, there's no reason to color them like that. But that's about it. You know, I guess we should have known what we were getting into, because the first splash page of this is possibly the most Furman-y page to ever Furman a Furman. You know, the die is cast, etc. Everything is word synonym. And, you know, we just roll along from there as usual. And, God, where do I start? You know, one of the things is that this really... There are an awful lot of callbacks to Transformers the movie in this. I mean, it gets referenced by everything, everywhere, forever, but it's just an awfully high density even for a Transformers comic at this point.
It's a little overdone, but so is Simon Furman.
Yeah. You know, I'm just... It's slightly confusing why we needed to replay a slightly modified version of the end of Transformers the movie. You know, we go through, we have the demons, the pre-Transformer Cybertronian thing standing in for the Sharktacons, and Grimlock does his foot stomp me, Grimlock say execute them deal, which apparently is divinely inspired.
Okay.
And, you know, at the last minute when everything seems bleak and impossible, here comes Rodimus Prime, who is apparently good at throwing Decepticon leaders out of things. That's apparently his thing.
Seemingly? I mean, I guess we all need, you know, a gimmick.
Yeah. Apparently he's Toad from Super Mario Brothers 2. He's the one who's good at throwing.
What was Luigi good at?
Jumping.
I thought that was the princess.
The princess hovers, but Luigi has the highest jump.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
Plus, we need something to talk about that's not Regeneration 1.
Desperately. But, you know, about... You know, just to keep up with our previous reviews, I decided that in this issue, Bludgeon is Raccoon, because everybody gets thrown at them, everybody gets the crap knocked out of them, and then Rodimus Prime or Goku shows up, and he's done. That's it.
Rodimus Prime being Goku.
It kind of works.
I'd buy it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm kind of thinking the way this has gone that issue zero is not really so much a case of, you know, expanding what the story is. It's basically just like, here's a preview for the last story arc coming in 2 months.
Pretty much.
I feel a lot less good about that book now than when I was reading it, having made these realizations.
Yeah, it's nice to look at. I mean, I figured that all the things it was showing us were going to tie into the final arc. I was kind of hoping maybe a little bit less directly. But, well.
What I was thinking, hoping for, whatever, was more that, yeah, this is all stuff that's going to happen, but this issue wouldn't just be in place to say, here's the things that are coming up in the next few months.
Yeah.
You know, give more detail than would have been there anyway, unless there's going to be, like, major rewrites on the last couple of issues to account for what's been told already. I really get the feeling we're going to get most of this re-explained, reintroduced as it comes up in the storyline.
Yeah, probably so. I mean,
Furman.
Yeah. I'm wondering now, though, that makes the most significant question I have about this book at this point, if Guido will try and replicate all these different styles that appeared in issue zero.
Or if it'll even be necessary.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind it. It'd be something to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And art-wise, I think Guido's settling in pretty well. I think this is, you know, I don't know how to put it except that it's less Andrew Wildman and better at being Andrew Wildman when it is Andrew Wildman. You know, in the fight with Bludgeon, there is a face for Cup that is absolutely spot on the way Andrew Wildman would have drawn that.
Of course, there's also a long shot of Bludgeon where it looks like he has full pouting lips.
Well, yeah.
That was a little creepy.
Yeah.
The one thing that kind of hit me, and it didn't even really click for me until I read your review on T-Formers, this is the end of this story arc. There is nothing about this that really feels like, hey, this is the end of a story.
Yeah, it's not. It's just you know,
like the last one.
Mm-hmm. Just like the last two. It's like, okay, this is done now, and we're moving on to the next thing, whatever that is.
But, I mean, you might remember I really felt that with the Scorponok storyline. You know, the end of the issue came, it's just like, wait, is this over with now? I cannot tell.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the first story arc had the same problem, of course. I think this pretty much sums up Regeneration 1 as a concept and its story arcs in general. Simon Furman does not know when or how to stop.
So, when March rolls around, because I believe it will be March, when March rolls around and we get to the end of issue 100, are we going to know the book has ended?
Well,
besides that, there won't be an issue the following month.
Well, we'd better. I mean, that's kind of what I'm hoping, is that it actually, you know, again, it's always looking ahead. It's always moving towards the next storyline. This is the last storyline. This is the last arc. There's nothing ahead of this. So, you know, now it is now or never that this book will actually live in the present and tell the story of now, as opposed to telling you about all these great stories it is eventually going to tell you.
Right. But the point is, will it actually do that? Is that possible to achieve with this writer?
I don't know. I'd like to think so. But, well, the 15 issues, we've 16. We've gotten so far 17, counting the preview issue from
You're
Free Comic Book
Day.
Yes, I am. Well, actually, no, I'm not making this worse. I'm not making this anything. But yeah, we've gotten through 17 of 21 issues. We have, or 22. We have spent all of this time, you know, building
up.
You realize
we've been doing this for over a year now.
Yep. And we've spent all this time building up to something, and God.
I really need a slide in this set for, like, the Picard facepalm.
Yeah. Yeah, you
or
do.
Or I should have left the Drift facepalm from last weekend. One or the other, it just needs something to punctuate this right here, and me doing it myself is not accomplishing it.
But yeah, you know, this, it feels to me like we've been spent the entire, all the issues, I'm not even going to bother trying to number them because I'll get it wrong three times again. It feels like we spent all this time trying just to get to this point, to tell whatever the actual story is. And I think that's the problem with it. It feels like everything we've gone through up to this point is inconsequential just to get to this point. Problem being that it always feels like that. It always feels like it's headed for the next point and never actually dealing adequately with the one it's trying to make at the moment.
It strikes me, too, that if this was to be, like, readapted into a novelization,
mm-hmm.
where it's all in one volume, you know, 300 pages maybe, and, you know, just kind of whittled down to the essential elements of the story, if it could be told all in one pass without having to break it up into monthly installments, I think it would be able to present a lot better.
Quite possibly. If this is collected into, you know, a trade paperback or an omnibus edition or both, it'll be really interesting to go back and look at that and see what it reads like, because, you know, it the starts of issues are still going to be fairly apparent, but I, you know, if you were to get rid of the various titles and title pages, I'm not sure you'd be able to tell where one issue stopped and another began.
Yeah, it's hard to say, but it's just, it's so apparent that Regeneration 1 overall has been written as one single work that's then been broken down so that it can be sold monthly.
Yeah.
And that's what's hurting it. You know, that's the biggest problem it's up against.
Yeah, it just kind of feels like the chapter breaks are a page or two out of sync with the actual book. You know, if we stopped a page or two before, a page or two after, it might feel like a little bit more like an actual ending than what we're getting.
Mm-hmm. A year. More than a year.
Year and a quarter.
Actually, for 17 in, it's like a year and a half.
Yeah, and plus there was a fairly wide lead, I believe, at least a few months between the Free Comic Book Day issue and the start of the thing.
I thought the Free Comic Book Day issue was the month before the actual start.
I could have sworn it was a couple of months.
Well, neither one of us can do the research right now, so.
Yeah.
The point is, though, this has been going on way too long.
Yeah, but only 5 months left, and it's running out of space to not get to the point, so one way or another, you know, we'll either get to the point or we'll get done.
And at this point, I don't really care which.
No.
Radio Free Cybertron has teamed up with Kokomo Toys and Collectibles in Kokomo, Indiana. If you're in the Kokomo area, visit our store for a huge selection of new and classic toys. Visit online at www.kokomotoys.com for our address and store hours. While you're there, check out our listing of pre-order items, as well as visit our eBay store. Visit us at www.kokomotoys.com. That's KOKOMOTOYS.com. We're also on Facebook.
Anything else, guys? Anything pressing going on this week that we failed to mention?
No. Just I think you're going to be seeing a lot, because we saw some deals the past few weeks on Metroplexes. So.
Oh yeah. Has anybody gone to a Costco to see how many of those are in stock?
I was going to check Greensboro when I was down there for the convention. Problem is, I don't have a Costco here in Danville, so I don't have a reason for a subscription. but I thought I would just check and see if they had any.
Just say, hey, I want a trial membership. Let me walk around, and they'll let you.
They don't have one.
What?
They'll let you in for free, but you can't buy anything. You have to actually buy a.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying you know buy one.
I gotcha.
So I'm just saying I would just be curious.
Yeah. Yeah, but I have seen them locally at some Toys R Us's there in Greensboro, and so I got a feeling if you're looking for Metroplex, you'll be seeing sales on him before too long, just because he's the big item of the year.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think he's going to be hard to get because there's been reports that not all Costco's are actually going to carry him, and the ones that are probably only getting like one shipment
of like 80 or 100 or something.
Yeah, Toys R Us has kind of had, they've kind of been doing their two at a time thing. I'm not sure if they're box two in a box, but because there was a Toys R Us local to me that had them, and I went back like a week or two ago after they had that sale for, he was on sale for like 109 at Toys R Us, and they were both gone.
Yeah, animated plastic Metroplex is at Costco. Go, you get them for like $80.
Now you know I would definitely get it for that, but you know I'm much happier getting Diesel for this near same amount of money versus the Metroplex. It's just
I like Metroplex.
Yeah,
I think it's pretty great.
He's good. I want my Trypticon.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. Well, next, you know, that'll be the next Titan, and if not, I'll cry.
Now the next one will probably probably the Metro Titan. I'm sure they'll do a recolor of the Metroplex before too long, just because just to get the money out of the mold.
I don't think that'll be a mass release, though. If they do that, that's going to be like a show special or something.
Something.
It's
well,
just it won't sell enough units to justify putting it out to the regular stores like they're doing with Metroplex.
Well, Brian will buy two at least. There's two right there.
Yeah.
It's really, you know, the last few waves of Beast Hunters I have not seen anywhere locally, other than the show this off in the pre-show. I did find the Vertibeak.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I did find that, but no RC, no knockouts. I did see Cryofire. The blue version of the Voyager Predaking, and that's really it. These last few waves are getting hard to find, or at least they're not hitting yet.
Yeah, I mean, other than getting Energon, I've already forgotten. My brain has already failed me.
Treadbolt.
Yeah, Treadbolt. Like, what the hell? I always want to call him Armada Energon Scavenger, even though he's not the repainted Scavenger from Energon. Other than that, and some RoboForce figures, that's all I've gotten. So, not much for me. I guess we can go ahead and end things this week. You can find us on Twitter at TF Radio, and we are on Facebook at facebook.com/TF Radio. And we had mentioned during the interview last week with Nebulon Pirate Radio that they are moving over. You can find them at tfradio.net/NPR. Not National Public Radio, but Nebulon Pirate Radio. So they are there.
Our NPR is much more entertaining than their NPR, probably.
Yeah. I am on Twitter at bkilby. Facebook.com/bkilby is where you can find me. Or actually, Brian Kilby is where you can. Facebook.com/Brian Kilby. My Facebook stuff is way better than my Twitter stuff. Diecast, you are what? At Diecast2?
Diecast2. At Diecast2 for Twitter. And also make sure you follow at TF Radio because I sometimes accidentally send tweets from there.
I saw that. I'm like, I'm going to delete that. I don't want people thinking that the at TF Radio account is bigoted against Windows Phone 8.
I like Windows Phone 8. Everyone says it works really well. It's just I have a problem that it doesn't have enough apps for me to use it.
It has enough apps for me to use it. It probably doesn't have enough apps to satisfy me.
Yes. That's a good point.
It's got Twitter, it's got Facebook, and that's it. You know, I use the web browser for most of everything else. Don, you are at, what are you at?
I am on Twitter at at HMRC4EVR, the number 4. You can also find me, Donald Ferguson, on Facebook. And that's it.
Awesome. If you are not already watching live, catch us at tfradio.net/live. Starting about 8:30 Eastern time on Wednesdays. Exciting show this week for our live viewers. So many technical issues. It's been hilarious. It's been a comedy of errors. Normally it's not that bad, but it was pretty funny this week. We have a great chat who's basically stuck through all of this, but it's normally worth it because you get to see a lot of stuff that doesn't actually make the show. We typically have a pre-show and a post-show, and the post-show Google Plus Hangout, and you can circle us at Google Plus. Go to tfradio.net/gplus, the PLUS, not the sign, and circle us. We'll circle you back, and we will let you know when we are hanging out. So I guess that does it for this week, guys. I will see you next week. Have a good one.
And we'll take
care. See you guys.
This has been Radio Free Cybertron. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Watch our live stream at tfradio.net/live. Join our Facebook fan page at facebook.com/tfradio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, TF Radio Network. Have a question or comment? Leave it on our Facebook fan page or mail it to contact@tfradio.net. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons license. Any part of this podcast can and should be redistributed, but please, proper attribution is required. If you know what's good for you,